From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 576, Be the Master, with guest Don Jones, recorded Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, bringing back one of my favorite people in the world, Don Jones, back on the show. He is the curriculum director for the online training company Pluralsight and has been a Microsoft MVP award recipient since 2004, the authors of dozens of books, and the co-founder of PowerShell.org. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good to be here again.
Oh, happy to have you on. And of course, PowerShell, you definitely jumped on that bandwagon at the beginning, and you were right.
It looks like it, yeah.
Last week's show with Josh Duffney talking about debugging PowerShell and just really having a conversation about the entire deployment and development pipeline of PowerShell code. Multiple IT guys are writing code together and building test harnesses and deploying into production. Like, they're developers.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how long it's come. I think in the beginning, everybody was really worried about becoming a developer, and you kind of had to build the training around that. The reason the Month of Lunches book has done so well, I think, is because I really didn't try and get too much into development. But it's kind of like, you know, the first hit is free. Eventually, you actually are going to be a developer. I'm not going to tell you up front.
No, and I got to grab a comment off of a past show of yours from 505, PowerShell at 10 years old with Don Jones, November of 2016. And the comment is from Nick Pilkington, who said, I think that automation, especially with tools like PowerShell, will eventually leave the monkeys without jobs to do.
Yep.
Better to be on the side of building the tools than on the side whose job will be automated.
Yeah, you know, there's a funny thing that goes along with that I think a lot of people don't realize. And with all the craziness in the stock market recently, I was talking to a friend. And I said, do you know how an economy grows? Like, if you have an economy, congratulations, how do you make it bigger?
Right.
And the only way you make it bigger is to get more output from the exact same input.
So right.
Typically, that means a big capital investment, buying a bunch of machines to automate manufacturing. That's the traditional example.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as true in information technology. The way you make an economy grow when it's an information economy is through automation. That's the only way you can get more output from the same input. If you're not part of that input, then you're not really useful. Like, we're going to get rid of you, and we might not replace you with a giant robotic manufacturing machine, but we're going to replace you with someone that accomplishes a very similar role.
Right. And does it more efficiently. That is the classic definition of Luddite-ism, right?
Yep. Exactly.
It's not like those looms unemployed everybody. It's that they didn't want to learn to use the looms, so they destroyed them.
Yep.
So, Nick, thanks so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com. or via any of the social media, because every show is published on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Google+. And if you comment there and we read it on the show, we'll send you a mug. But we're not going to talk PowerShell today, are we? Because you've written a new book, and it's not a PowerShell book. I am confused.
It's not a technical book at all, actually.
That's really interesting.
I was a little confused myself.
What happened to you, Don? You used to make sense.
Yeah, so the book is called Be the Master, and it came from, oh gosh, close to 5 or 6 years of just having conversations with people. And I'm lucky that I get to interact with so many people who do read my books or have taken my classes or watched videos or whatever. And it's wonderful to hear the feedback from them. And honestly, the best part of the job is when someone says, yeah, you know, I really got into this and I got a better job or whatever else. And I started saying to them, well, yeah, that's fantastic. I'm really proud of you. That's wonderful for you and your family. What are you doing to give back? Because I didn't make very much money doing those books or anything else.
Sure.
It's not like I bought a house on that. So you kind of owe it to take that onto someone. And they look at me and they're like, well, yeah, but I'm not that good yet. And I started to realize we have this like really toxic culture around learning and helping and education and everything else. And so I started, you know, talking about it in a lot of different ways. And I keep going back to this whole apprenticeship thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's how I grew up. I was an apprentice. I didn't go to college. And so I'm a little closer to that, I think.
What did you apprentice in?
I was an aircraft mechanic.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So I graduated from a 4-year apprenticeship, and mm-hmm. that was plenty of classroom education, but the vast majority of it, 80, 90% was on the job working next to someone who knew what they were doing.
Right.
Just learning as I went. And I said, you know, nobody needs to be an expert. Like the guy who taught me how to put airplanes together didn't know how to design airplanes. He was by no means an aeronautic expert, but he still had plenty to teach me because I knew less than him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like we should have that kind of a culture, especially in IT where it's not really something that colleges teach you. Like it's not a lawyer or a doctor type job. It's a doing type job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where the whole book came from.
In that scenario, also, you have the split between the continuously evolving technology. So making curriculum is incredibly hard, and you know that better than most.
Oh, yeah.
And what any given organization chooses as their slice of the state of technology for the organization. They don't line up. So, you know, apprenticing within an organization is got both those aspects of not only what tech is out there, but what tech do we use?
Yeah. And I think all this comes at a really good time too, because we've had about a decade where hiring was pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
You could go out and you could get some entry-level IT people and you wind up doing what winds up being an informal apprenticeship. They kind of figure out your slice as they go.
Inevitably.
But we've just hit this incredibly tight labor market. And it's getting one of the reasons the stock market is so shifty right at the moment is because investors are largely worried about companies' ability to staff up like the way they need to.
Yeah.
And that creates a perfect opportunity for companies to solve the problem on their own and say, look, we're just going to go hire some high school kids. We're going to get them an A+ and maybe a network plus, and then we're just going to toss them into the job and teach as we go. And it can be very inexpensive. It creates a ton of employee loyalty. They learn exactly what you need them to know.
Yeah.
Not only the book stuff, but all that weird institutional lore that mm-hmm. gets locked up in people's heads. They learn that too. And so it supports your environment. So I think there's an opportunity here for companies to make use of that. But what we've lacked is the other side of the equation. We've lacked people in IT who've been doing it for years who have the confidence to feel they could teach an apprentice. And it's nothing more than that. The expertise is already out there. I mean, you and I meet people every single day that are experts. It's just having that confidence and feeling that you've been successful enough that you're worthy. And that's kind of what the book is about. I hope it turns some people around in the industry and gets companies hiring apprentices. I mean, I can't imagine what a fantastic world it would be if that's how we operated IT instead of this, you know, the traditional college model, which has never really worked all that well for us.
Well, and I have to wonder, it's not so much that you need to hire apprentices. I think anybody's willing to be an apprentice. It's that the organization sort of commits to, we have an apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
And it is part of the responsibility of our masters to have apprentices, and that there is some sense of growth that you're not, you know, I could also see when you were the apprentice mechanic, just handing the guy wrenches isn't enough.
Nope.
He's got to give you additional tasks. He's got to sort of press against your ability. There's a commitment from the master to be aware of what you know, what you don't know, and make you press against your abilities.
Yeah, very much so. And the other side of it too, is you will run into some people in the industry who feel that way. They're mm-hmm. like, yeah, I would love to be able to teach someone. It would be great to be able to, you know, hand down the knowledge I've learned on the job and everything else. But, and this is where it inevitably comes in. My organization is a little different, which is not true because they're all a little different.
Yes.
That's how they're all the same. And we just won't do that. And I'm starting to tell people now, like in the past few months, like, you know what? If that's what excites you, like if you really want to work for an organization that supports that type of a learning model and a growth model, and your organization doesn't, this is a great time to go find another job.
Sure.
Because there's thousands of unfilled IT jobs.
Yeah.
And we're to the point again where you could probably command a little bit of a premium.
Mm-hmm. If you can't change your job, change your job.
Change your job. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that in that interview, to say part of what's important to me is teaching others, that I'm in a place with my skill set where I think it's useful to share to others. I think many employers, as an interviewer, I would be keen to have someone that's interested in that. Because often it's not that uncommon, especially I think in the sysadmin space. It's like, tell me what you want. I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry. I'm good at it. I don't really want to talk to anybody. Just send me the emails. I'll get it done.
Yep. And it's not something that I think an interviewer would typically think to ask for
mm-hmm.
because we don't have that corporate culture yet. But we've come to a point now where as the interviewee, we're back to a place where you can start making demands like that,
sure.
or at least strongly worded requests. Like if you want me, you know, you're not interviewing me. I'm interviewing you and your company.
Right.
I'm deciding if this is the place I want to work because there's lots of them out there. And so if people are just kind of willing to get off their butts and fill out their resume and make that happen, you can make all kinds of things happen, even internally. Like take the resume to your boss and say, hey, look, turns out I've updated this and I have some demands I'd like to discuss.
Right.
I want us to bring in young people and I want to be part of helping make them part of our team.
Right. And of course, it also addresses the hiring issue. You know,
yep.
I'm with you that there's no CTO, no HR manager that isn't battling mightily over, we simply cannot recruit, quote unquote, the talent. And I loathe that word.
Yep.
Because I honestly, as I've read books like Talent is Overrated, I've just come to appreciate there is no talent. There's only the work you've done to get better at your craft. And when you call it talent, you sort of diminish people's efforts.
You do. And I think there's another place too. You know, the labor unions, ages ago, decades ago, mm-hmm. a lot of labor unions have moved away from this, but they really kind of took the place of the guilds. Mm-hmm. And when you needed to hire a cook or a driver or whatever, you went to the guild, you went to the union and said, hey, we've got an opening, and they filled it for you because it was in their interests to make sure that the trade was doing well.
Right.
Labor unions have largely moved away from that, which is unfortunate. But I think IT, particularly in the admin space, which has never really unionized, we have an opportunity to eventually create our own guilds and create a space where we verify each other's proficiency and we bring new people in solely on our own through our organizations. And then we provide a resource when someone needs to hire that is this, you know, collectively put together thing, more of a guild than a trade union. But it's an interesting place, something that everybody's going to kind of have to pull together on. It's something I made a pitch for at the very end of the book.
You're not going to get any argument from me. I completely agree. We struggle in IT, and I'm talking about the comprehensive IT of developers and analysts and sysadmins, testers and InfoSec, with being a profession.
Yeah.
Because we simply do not have that backing professional organization. And in my mind, what makes a profession is an organization that not only says, yes, you're a sysadmin, but more says to the employer, if that person messes up after we've qualified them, we're liable.
Yep.
You know, this is where malpractice lawsuits come from and the bar and the legal side. Like, what makes a profession? Liability makes a profession.
Yep, exactly.
And nobody seems to be willing to assume the liability of IT.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have to get there because you look at the breaches and you look at the obvious mismanagement of major IT resources mm-hmm. and estates, and that liability is going to find a place to live one yes. way or another at this point.
Well, I think we've been able to get away with it in IT because when we get it right, it's so incredibly profitable that you can afford to be wrong, you know, half the time
yeah.
because the payoff is tenfold. And so we will suck it down. But as this is a maturing industry and there isn't as many of those giant wins, we are going to have more incremental wins. You're going to need to be better. You can't afford yep. this level of failure and this level of waste.
Yeah, and that betterness, unfortunately, is not something that's easily communicated via a book or a video. It's something that you know, passes from father to son and from mother to daughter in mm-hmm. the industry. And I think that's the bit that we're missing. I think a lot of our biggest mistakes have come from a lack of lore, a lack of craft.
Right.
And we treat it as something that, you know, anybody can pick up a book and learn to become an MCSA, and that's fine, but that doesn't actually mean you know how to do the job, and we all know that.
Yes.
But we haven't really taken that next step toward addressing it.
Well, and the few times I think about Microsoft did like a master's class in SQL Server. And I think briefly they had one around architecture as well,
yeah.
where it very much was senior architects evaluating other prospective architects, which is, you know, your sort of classical guild model, but they never sustained.
Yeah. And it wasn't sustainable. And I think it conflicted with a lot of Microsoft's own business interests.
Right.
The people who went through that certified master program, because they had it for a variety of fields. There was one on collaboration and communications. The people who went through it and came out successful at the other end were bright, educated, creative, smart, clever people. And I think Microsoft did everything really, really well with that whole program, except they never really raised the profile of it all that much.
Right.
And I don't think they ever found a way to make it part of their sustainable business model. The certification piece of Microsoft has just always kind of been a redheaded stepchild in a lot of ways. The people who run it do a great job with it and they really believe in it, but the company changes what it wants from that too much.
Sure, because it comes down to the product they're selling. Yeah. I wonder if Microsoft's move away from selling boxes into selling utilization of Azure might actually help that.
It could. I wonder, because I think Microsoft has had such a mixed success in cultivating expertise within its audience base. You see a lot of things in Azure deliberately moving toward you don't have to be an expert.
Right.
Like, we're just going to be your expert for you because we don't trust you. And they very much have come around to that. You know, this recent announcement of only the long-term servicing branch being available for your normal install models. And if you want to be on the current branch, it's only for containers, really stresses and highlights. They don't trust us to keep things rolling and updated. They don't think we have the competence. And in a lot of cases, we don't.
And I don't disagree, but I also wonder if part of that motivation is you can't possibly make enough experts to feed the pipeline of revenue they want to feed.
Yeah.
So they're trying to broaden the pipeline.
Yeah. And they don't have a strong base of expertise. They've not cultivated it
right
in a way that, say, the Unix space did, where, you know, it kind of came from this dark, secretive place where only the masters of the mysteries were allowed to be. Microsoft was always much more democratized.
Sure. And commoditized.
Yeah.
The cliff was so steep to climb to get anything to work in the Unix world. And Microsoft made that very gradual gradient where it may be ugly, but it worked.
Yeah.
So the problem with the cliff model is a lot of people just don't get over it. The few that have it are great, but we need many more. You know, here we are in this tight market. I appreciate that they're making the bar simpler to jump over. I just believe that if you educate more people, they will utilize more of your product.
Yeah, they will. I just think it needs to not be on the vendors. I always mistrust the vendors' motives.
I'm not going to argue with you there.
Yeah, it's too easy for them to say, we want to allege that there are educated people, but right. We don't necessarily want to have them. And so that's why it comes back on us as an industry to be our own masters and to be our own guild and to bring our own apprentices and journeymen along.
Don, give me one moment here to share this very important message. Where does it hurt the most when your team doesn't know what they're doing? By screwing up group policy, of course. Group policy is used by 100% of organizations with Active Directory, and hey, that's you. If you're the only one at your company with group policy knowledge, then people are asking you time and time again to look over their shoulder for help. Get your whole team trained on group policy by Jeremy Moskowitz, Group Policy MVP from gpanswers.com. Get online training, come to a public class with other IT admins, or host your own private class. Just don't leave group policy management to chance. Get it handled with hundreds of real-world tips, tricks, best practices, and real lab examples for you and your team to take home and implement immediately. And if you're flirting with group policy and MDM co-management, the gpanswers.com class explains it all. Group policy touches every machine at your company. Get it totally handled by going to gpanswers.com and getting the course outline and see if it's right for you. gpanswers.com, where smart IT admins come to get smarter. And we're back. You're listening to Don Jones. I'm Richard Campbell. It's Run As Radio. Now, I'm going to buy in on your, this isn't Microsoft's responsibility problem. Let's talk a little bit about the employer. I mean, shouldn't it simply be important? If you need to fill the body space, get those jobs, building a good pipeline for teaching to get them educated and engaged. Isn't that a worthwhile exercise for an employer?
Yeah, it is. And you certainly see that in plenty of other fields. I mean, the law field in particular, the way they bring people in, you know, granted, you have to basically have a master's or a doctorate degree by the time you come out of law school.
Right.
But that's just your starting point. That's when you're ready to become an actual apprentice and you do your internship time and you do lots of pro bono work and they put you through this kind of ringer that's designed to support the craft itself. The medical industry does the same thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of your blue collar industries will do the same thing. You know, your trades like plumbing and electrical and construction, all that, they do that as well.
Yeah.
We've never really done that in IT. It's demonstrably worth it because there's tons of trades that simply would cease to exist if we just relied on book learning. We've never really adopted that mindset. And it's one that I think if a smart CTO or two sat down and really did the math on and ran through it a couple of times, they'd realize it and it would become a huge competitive advantage because they're no longer relying on this dicey job market, which may or may not go the right direction. They're no longer relying on, well, you know, we can always bring in some visa folks from another country because right. We don't have enough in this country. They build their own pipeline. They create their own people. They go recruit out of a high school where you've got fresh, young, spongy minds that will do whatever you want them to do.
You know who that describes to me? Microsoft. What 70-80% of their employees, it's the only job they've had.
Yeah.
They hired them directly out of university, either MBA grads or ComSci grads.
Yep. And for the developers, I think you do see that happening a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We don't see it on the engineering side, the admin side all that much.
No, not as much. But, you know, it's interesting. You and I have worked closely enough with Microsoft to be very aware that senior third-party people are rare.
Yeah.
You talk to a general manager or a product unit manager or a VP, this is their career. This is what they've done. They grew up inside of Microsoft. They have lived the Microsoft life. A third-party one is an oddity.
Yeah. You look at the well-known names, your Brad Andersons, your Scott Guthrie's. Yep. They've been there most of their lives, and that's what they know, and they came up that way.
Yeah. Scott Guthrie, who I consider a friend known for his whole career at Microsoft, he graduated from Duke University in 1997, went to work at Microsoft. That's it. He's, yep. It's 20 years.
Yep.
And he's not an anomaly. That seems to be the norm. I mean, and I use it as a reference to say, this is not unprecedented. You build good pipelines to teach people and give them paths to grow, they stay.
It is. It's not unprecedented. I think the difficulty when you move that out into the larger business world outside of your tech companies like Microsoft, your Googles, your Amazons, those folks, they realized that the pipeline was going to be a problem, and they take those steps to avoid it. For companies that don't do IT for a living, you know, you're in retail or manufacturing, IT is a necessary evil. It's part of business. They've never really picked that attitude up. And I think a lot of times it's because they don't realize the expertise they have on staff.
Right.
And they don't necessarily have a feeling, like an emotional warm and fuzzy, that their staff will be able to pull off this let's bring in apprentices thing. And that's partly because their staff has probably never evinced any kind of interest in it. They've never, you know, kind of demonstrated it. So it's just kind of a catch-22 where there's this big churn of things that could happen and should happen. And all the right bits are probably in mostly the right places, but the right people haven't come out to drop enough catalyst in the mix to make it start to form.
To me, it sounds like you're leading into this be the master mindset, which is it's finding the masters that is the challenge.
It isn't. You already have them. It's just identifying them as such. It's
identifying them, right?
Yeah, it's making people feel that they do have something worthy. You don't have to be an expert. The story I put together for the book to kind of tee off a lot of the discussion was this blacksmith from Lancashire, England, which is a fictional place. I know there's no actual place called Lancashire. You can't believe how many comments I got on that. And he takes on this apprentice, and, you know, over time, the apprentice becomes a journeyman, and they take on a second apprentice, and the master starts to back out of the shop, and he's not working as much anymore. And the journeyman starts to get pissed off about it. And he says, you know, I'm doing all this work, and I'm educating this other guy. Shouldn't I be the master here? And the master says, oh, that took a lot longer than I thought. Okay, here's the keys. Goodbye. And he's like, wait. I'm not an expert. I'm not ready to become master yet. And the master says, yeah, I could never make a shield either. Goodbye. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to have something worthy of passing down. And everything you know is potentially worthy. I think we in the industry, and this is probably a human thing, we spend a lot of time looking at our heroes, right?
Right.
The people we look up to, and we want to be like them. And we forget that there's this birth rate of young people coming in behind us who don't know anything and who are eager to learn. And all of us have something in our head. Just because we survived to adulthood means there's something that we got that we can turn around and teach those folks. And we can continue to be the apprentice to our masters.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a time when we can turn around and offer service as a master to another apprentice who's just coming along. And I think it's just changing that mindset. You can be a student and a teacher. It's not a binary decision like colleges tend to teach us it is.
Yes. And I totally agree. I mean, you stop learning, you're basically dying.
Yeah.
But I also have certainly the appreciation that the more experienced people I work with, the less certain they seem to be, that they actually know enough to know what they don't know.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody feels like they must be the dumbest person in the room and no one else has caught on yet. And you really just kind of have to take a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And instead of comparing yourself to your colleagues and your peers and your heroes, find a room with people you know don't know everything that you do.
Right.
That's the trick, is acknowledging that you can be a master, but then also finding your apprentices. Instead of being in the rat race and worried about the guy next to you who's doing the same job as you, go find some people who aren't yet ready to do that job and get them there.
I do think it's very challenging to build up a body of relevant work as a master in IT because our industry itself is shifting so rapidly.
Yeah, it is. I think, though, when I worked for the Navy, and that was my apprenticeship, is I was a civilian employee of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the government, they're so picky about making sure that, you know, hiring and promotion is done very above board, very objectively. And so every position has KSAs, knowledge, skills, and abilities.
Right.
And the best piece of advice I got going in was, you know, as an apprentice, you're going to get to work on a lot of different things. We're going to rotate you around. We really want you to do every job here at least once. He said, keep a diary, literally a written journal, write them all down. Because when you go for a promotion, they're going to ask you to, okay, when did you learn or demonstrate these KSAs? And you're going to have a list there.
Right.
And you kind of, after 4 years, you forget. It's no longer impressive that I can put an F-14 together.
Sure.
But that actually is an enormous body of work for a 22-year-old to have in their minds. But I knew it because I documented it all.
It's as much a reminder for you as anything else.
Yeah. And I think that's something anybody can do, is just start writing down what you actually know how to do. And you'll be surprised how enormous of a list it actually is. Mm-hmm. And then think about the fact that someone who's 18, 19, coming out of college, maybe a year of community college, They don't know any of that.
Sure. I've been doing some advising for startups recently, and we had a conversation about setting up a sales team, and I literally unwound for 20 minutes about the last time I could start a sales team. This is the approach I took. Blah, 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 blah. And the guy looking at me was like, wow, I didn't know you were a sales specialist. I'm not. I just needed a sales team for one of my companies, and that's what we had to do. You forget that you've been through that.
Yep. So it's a good idea just to write all those things down and remind yourself how much mastery you actually do have in your craft.
Sure. You know, I'm going to pull on the guild mindset a little harder. I totally get the apprenticeship model of just learning fundamentals, knowing where you're at. But in my memory of journeyman was when a master sends their experienced apprentice off to another master.
Yep.
To take that journey and broaden their skill set.
Yep.
I would just wonder if we can get there as an organization that you start shifting these people around, whether within the company or perhaps across companies at times, just to give them a broader viewpoint.
Yeah, it gets a little tougher when you start dealing with things like trade secrets, right? Because back in the day, it was the guilds that had all the trade secrets.
Right.
And now it's the companies that have them.
Yeah.
So I think there's still a model where, you know, a journeyman is someone who can work on their own and who isn't quite ready to teach, but rotating them around in different positions, cross-training them is what we would call it today, I suppose, helping them understand more about not only the job, but the company. Like, what does the company care about from a business perspective? There's a whole section of the book that's just kind of a business primer, because if you work in the business world, you need to know those rules. And as you start to not only understand the what of your job and the how of your job, but the why, like, why does the company want to do it this way? That's when you've started to cross over and you're really ready to start training someone else.
An aspect of the thinking here is, how do we make better masters if you're always starting from one set of masters? Like, can anybody be better than the previous generation of masters? And that cross-training seems to be the way.
Yeah, it's an accumulation over time. It's more things like user groups. You know, those become nascent guilds. Honestly, developers are much better about it than sysadmins about the user groups. Too many sysadmins are focused on their job and not their career. They're not focused on the craft.
Yeah.
They're just worried about what my boss pays me to do, and I could give a hang about the rest of it. And so they don't want to take the time to go to the user group. They don't want to help recruit new people into it. They don't want to shivvy their colleagues into coming along. And until we can correct that mindset, and until people feel that the trade has a reason to exist beyond just your job.
Yes.
And your career is bigger than just this one paycheck that you're getting. Until people change that attitude and start to actually take the time, and it's going to be a heavy lift at first. So there's going to have to be some really dedicated people who see the vision, who want to make it happen. Until that kind of tipping point occurs, that I think that's the catalyst that we need in the mix.
Yeah, it's this belief in progression in your career.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, and sacrificing the time to do it, you know, and the people who do that early are going to be lionized, right? They're going to be the ones in the history books. They're going to be the future Mark Manassis that everybody looks up to and knows. So there is kind of a soft reward for it, but it's a heavy lift. It's a sacrifice. It takes time, and you and your family have got to agree to that sacrifice. And that's a tough conversation for a lot of people.
It's very common for me, certainly on the IT side, to see folks. It's like they won't come to a weekend event. They'll only come during the week when they're on the clock with their employer.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
Yeah, the idea that their employer is responsible for providing training time solely.
Yeah.
And that they really have no willingness or interest in putting any of their own time into career advancement.
Yeah, the only thing that I kind of hold to that makes me feel a little better is I'm absolutely convinced that when push comes to shove, if their company has to lay people off, they'll be the first ones to go, and it'll be hard for them to get a job. And that makes me feel a little better inside.
Yeah. IT is also in a place now with the cloud and the increase in automation, and you've been certainly a part of that all along, where you do have to start thinking about your career. You really don't have a choice now.
Yeah.
The guy who only wants to spin screwdrivers to rack servers has got a problem. There's very few of those jobs left.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're all being pre-racked over in Asia, and they're coming over all on racks on containers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 The job has definitely shifted. And I understand that there's a lot of people who got into the field in the 90s, and, you know, they're my age now. They're in their middle age, and they don't want to start over in a new career.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you picked the wrong field. Like, we had an 8 to 10 year dead period where it seemed like nothing was ever going to change, but then everything changed all of a sudden, and it's still doing it. And this is the IT I got into. like the crazy, everything is different every day IT. That's what I signed up for. So, I mean, I understand.
Yeah. If you got in the 80s when everything was changing all the time, that's what you liked.
Yeah.
And the 90s, early aughts were dull.
Yeah, they really were.
And then it's suddenly not so dull anymore.
Yeah. And now's the time to make a career out of it.
Sure.
And there's plenty of people who'll be able to just, you know, sit in their current job. And that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to imply they're bad people or they deserve bad things to happen to them.
No.
However, the people that are going to have the best things happen to them are the ones who decide to make the sacrifice and take the time and to, in some way in their trade, be the master.
Sure. I appreciate that. Don, great thinking, and certainly a place I'm coming from. The book is Be the Master, and it's available on LeanPub for a very reasonable price, and unless you care to pay more because you have that option. Don Jones, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks, Richard. Always good to talk to you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.